Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I am going to say, I don't think that there is anything in human history that has caused as many workplace disputes as microwaves. Okay? I don't think pen thieves, of which there is an epidemic.
I don't know, quarter-inch thieves can be pretty...
Yeah, but that's a very exclusive area, but a couple of industries that have to worry about that. Like, to the point that most people just went, what?
Yeah, you're right. Right? But the ones who know, know.
It's like 10-millimeter socket thieves. There's a million of them, but like you're in a very particular industry. As far as every workplace everywhere goes, I don't think anything has ever caused as many workplace disputes as a microwave. Somebody in this building microwaved buttered popcorn during the break. And now, not only does Lonzo and my studio smell like buttered popcorn, now I am...
Wait. I don't smell like buttered popcorn.
No, I said the studio.
No, you said Lonzo and my studio.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
And I don't, you know...
Our studio smells like buttered popcorn, and I'm hungry. I'm not a breakfast guy. Despite being up at 3:30 in the morning, I'm not a breakfast guy.
So weird.
By 7 o'clock, I'm not hungry. But I'm also a late dinner guy. I'm like a 9 p.m. dinner guy, all right? So I'm usually still
good from the
night before. You know,
if you get up at 3:30, 7 o'clock's lunchtime, dude.
Not for me. I'm not hungry in the mornings. Doesn't matter if I get up at 3:30 in the morning or 11 in the morning. I'm not hungry in the a.m., right? Except now I am, and all I want to do is crush a giant bucket of extra buttered popcorn because somebody in this building had the audacity to microwave buttered popcorn at 6:45 in the damn morning. To the point that Lonzo and I think we know who the responsible parties are. And I will say that, first off, it's not who you guys probably think it is. And number two...
No, those guys don't eat popcorn in the morning.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, they don't.
And I'm going to say number two, the entities responsible might be, of all the shows, might be the nicest group of people in the building. And that's including Zoe and I, who are two of the nicest people you're ever going to meet.
Believe it or not, that is true.
Yeah. They might be the nicest group of people in this building as a group of people. And I'm about to walk down there and start a show-v-show rivalry because, and hear me out on this, stop. It's not lunchtime, all right? It's not lunchtime. For the love of everything sacred, who is microwaving popcorn at 6:45 in the morning? And making every one of your coworkers sit in the aroma of butter popcorn for like a while.
All right, so I'm texting Tim right now so we can eliminate him and eliminate that whole portion.
I don't think it's anybody on that station.
I don't either.
I don't think. I think you're right about the entities in question.
Yeah, but if anybody at Word right now were to make popcorn, it would be
It'd be him, for yes. sure, but I don't think it's them. And I will also
He says he also smells it, but it was not him.
Oh, for sure. I could go in the parking lot and smell it.
It
smells like I'm in a popcorn
machine.
By
the way, it smells like heaven. So
it's a
not
wonderful
like,
smell.
Yeah, it's not like it's a bad smell.
It's just not what I want to smell at 6:45 in the morning because now I'm hungry and I'm not leaving here until like 11:15 this morning. And I not just am hungry, but I'm specifically hungry for popcorn, which I don't have access to. right? So I'm about to go down there and start a show v. show dispute. If you SOBs don't stop microwaving popcorn at 6:45 in the morning, I'm about to be that guy who starts microwaving fish. Here's the problem. Zoe and I learned this when the AC went out in the middle of the summer this year. We are the very last studio connected to the AC, right? So when the AC cranks on, all the vents end in our studio, which means that any smell from any other room in the building comes here. We just get all of it, which I promise you, buttered popcorn is like way high on the list of smells that have come through this vent that I want to smell. But not at 6:45 in the morning.
There are 4 live morning shows going on right now in the building. So we've eliminated 2 of them. We know it's not on Word. We know it's not here.
I think you're right about who exactly
it is. I'm pretty sure it is because I've been here a long time and I don't recall that being a staple in the morning from either of those 2 shows. And there's someone over there who's fairly new.
Yeah. I'm going to stealth mission during the next break.
Maybe a couple years new, but still new comparatively to everyone who's in the building.
I am going to Assassin's Creed through the next break and find out if you're right.
Even if you have to just go in and look at the trash can, because by now...
I mean, sometimes in Assassin's Creed, you just got to, you know, you just got to...
You got to rummage. No. You're not doing that. No.
Hey, it's 7:05 in the morning. You got 54 minutes and 20 seconds until you got to be to work. And if you got to go to work, you're going to talk about sports. Because let's be honest, that's the highlight of your day. And if you're going to talk about sports, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you got to know what's going on in the world of sports, you need this. It's the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this lovely, I hope, Wednesday morning. Let's dive right in. Item numero uno. Found out yesterday, just minutes after the conclusion of the Rob Brown Show, which is on the air every weekday from 6 until 10 a.m., that the New York Jets have fired head coach Robert Saleh. He is the first coach to be canned in season since the Panthers relieved Matt Rhule of his duties a couple of years ago. Robert Saleh, after a 2-3 start, was removed from the office. And when I say removed, I don't mean from his duties. I mean they called up Big Mike, the security guard, and removed his ass from the facilities. Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, released a statement saying that the decision was, quote, mine and mine alone, end quote. According to Peter Schrager of the NFL Network, Woody Johnson and his brother Christopher Johnson, you know he goes by Christopher. Christopher, of course. Like the Sopranos,
he's got,
huh?
He's got money.
The vice chairman broke the news to Saleh in his office at the team facility. According to reports, Saleh was shocked. He was escorted to his car by the director of not just a security guard, the security guard walked him to his car. The Jets said that is protocol. That was not like a special thing. It was protocol. When an employee is terminated, they are brought to their car, which, okay, fine, whatever. I don't particularly, to be honest, care about that aspect of the story.
A lot of people do, though, because if that was protocol, why didn't other coaches who were fired there get escorted out? And apparently he's been the only one.
Wait,
I got it. New protocol.
New protocol. It's protocol. You've never done it before. It's a new protocol. We call it the Saleh protocol. Huh? Anyway, Saleh had promised multiple championships when he was hired back in 2021. He has none of them so far. 20-36 record, 0 playoff appearances in the midst of a 13-year playoff drought. The longest active drought in the National Football League. But this team came into the season with Super Bowl aspirations after Aaron Rodgers came back from his injury suffered 3 minutes into week 1 of last year for the Jets. Woody Johnson said he believes this to be the most talented team that the Jets have fielded in 25 years. I don't think that he is necessarily incorrect about that, but I also think the most talented team in 25 years for the Jets isn't a wildly talented team. It's not like they've been good and they were good a long time ago. They weren't exactly dynastic. I would just like to point out 25 years ago, like Tom Brady was about to come in the league, right? Like it sounds like a long time. It's really not. but they haven't been exceptional in that time span. Johnson, addressing the offense, said that, quote, "I think one of the reasons I decided to make a coaching change at the highest level is exactly that. We need to find ways to win, and we're not going to find those ways by doing the same thing over and over again," end quote. Look, man, like, I go back to the Minnesota game. Defensively, the Jets did enough to win that game. If Aaron Rodgers probably has one fewer pick, they probably do win that game and become the first team to defeat the Vikings. I go back to the Denver game. Your team gave up 10 points. Your team gave up less than 190 yards of offense. Your team allowed their quarterback to throw for a grand total of 62 yards, whatever it was, in Bo Nix. This is part of the reason, I think. I'm not saying the problem is because of Aaron Rodgers, but he's absolutely a part of it. You add on top of that the fact that during the 2.5 years he was the head coach, Salah started 6 quarterbacks: Zach Wilson, Mike White, Aaron Rodgers, Joe Flacco, Trevor Siemian, and Tim Boyle. And none of them have worked out. Not that Aaron Rodgers won't, but he hasn't yet. They're 2-3. Let's move on to item number 2. 2 playoff games in Major League Baseball last night. We opened up with an afternoon contest between the New York Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies. The NL East rivalry and the NLDS continues. And yesterday, it was the Mets getting the better of the Phillies to take a 2-1 lead in that NLDS. 7-2, your final score. Aaron Nola, who has been remarkable for the Phillies this year, gave up 4 earned runs in 5 innings. Did K8, but gave up a couple of dongs in that one, and was saddled with the L. Sean Manea for the Mets. Exceptional outing. 7 innings, just 3 hits, 1 earned run, and K'd 6 before turning it over to Maitland Stanek to finish this thing off. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't mean to shock, alarm, surprise any of you. The Mets are electrifying, man. I hate the Mets, with all due respect to my guy Jersey Joe over in the chat. Joe, love you. P1, you're the best of the best. I hate the Mets with the fire and passion of 1,000 suns.
Why?
Because they're the Mets.
Okay, just you don't like their uniform?
No, they're just them, just the essence of the Mets. Come on, dude. There's a team you just don't like. Why? Because I don't like them.
I think I do have some reasons, though. I mean,
I have reasons. The Mets. That's right. They're the Mets. I can't stand the Mets.
Is it the uniforms? Did they beat your team?
No. Let me clarify. They're the Mets. That's my reason. They're the Mets. I don't like them. That being said, and I said this yesterday to a friend of the show, Joey B. As me, I despise the Mets. As a fan of the game of baseball who wants the best for the game of baseball, the Mets are electrifying. Now, let me talk about the other game, and I'll tell you why here in just a minute. Last night, Fernando Tatis Jr. goes yard again. Dong number 4 in game number 5 of the postseason. He becomes just the second player in MLB history to have as many hits, runs, and RBIs as he does through the first 5 games of a postseason run. The Padres win 6-5 yesterday. Now, the game wouldn't have been that close if it wasn't for the fact that Teoscar Hernandez hit a granny shot in the 3rd inning. The Dodgers put up 6 in the 2nd. Teoscar helped them put up a 4-banger in the 3rd with a grand slam that made it a 1-run game. No one else would cross the dish the rest of the evening. And now the Padres find themselves up 2-1 in this series. And game 4 is in San Diego. I'm actually really excited about these 2 series. Why, you might ask? I'll tell you. Because Lonzo, you know how sometimes you get like a one-off little one-shot. We need some matches to fill the card at the next PLE. So sometimes you just kind of make up a rivalry on the fly. And you know how once in a blue moon, you get a heel versus heel matchup, and everybody kind of picks their favorite heel, and we're all like, it just ends up being a banger. It's that. I got on one hand the New York Mets, who are just obnoxious They're just obnoxious at large. Their fans are obnoxious. Love you, Jersey Joe. You're a good person. Their fans are obnoxious. Their players are obnoxious. Their owner's obnoxious. The whole team's obnoxious. And more importantly, great one, it's not just that they're obnoxious. It's that they revel in their obnoxiousness. They know that they are obnoxious, and they take pride in said obnoxiousism. Then on the other hand, there's the Padres. The Padres went to L.A. I got Fernando Tatis Jr. in the outfield looking Dodgers fans in the eyes and hitting the hip thrust right at him. I got Profar out in right field robbing Mookie Betts of a dong and then trolling a television network to the point that they ran the home run graphics and it turns out he caught the ball the whole time. And then John Adam in the dugout. It's a heel v heel matchup. The NLCS, if these two teams oh, and by the way, finishing off the two front runners in Philly and the Dodgers. The top two seeds are both in a 2-1 hole right now and about to get bounced. Two plucky underdogs, and they're also heels who love to talk a bunch of to the opponent's fans. Inject it in my veins. NLCS is going to be lights out. Those two series will conclude. Well, I think conclude. I think both the Dodgers and the Mets are going to win that very, very quickly because we're going to talk about this coming up in a minute. Item number three. The NCAA's Division I Council has voted to shorten the transfer portal window for FBS and FCS football as well as men's and women's basketball. That announcement came yesterday. The D1 Council reduced the total number of days players in the FBS and FCS levels can enter the portal. They had 45 days in total. Now they have 30. They will move forward with a 20-day transfer window from December 9th, the Monday after conference championship games, through December 28th, and a 10-day spring window from April 16th through 25th. The NCAA, FBS, and FCS oversight committees initially recommended eliminating the spring window, but because of the House antitrust settlement coming down and the fact that that likely would have been pushed back against, they said, what if we just shorten both windows? And they did that. We will talk more about that and what that means when we come back here in just a minute from now. Rob, the great one, Lonzo, and you. It's the Rob Brown Show right here on the Fan Upstate. The NCAA has elected to shorten the transfer portal window. It is now 30 days in total. It used to be 45. Now it is 30 days in total with a bonus window for any athlete who has a coaching change. If a head coach departs the school, the athletes at that school will receive an extra 30-day transfer window opening the day after the departure of their head coach is announced. I don't particularly have an issue with this because I've got to say one of the things that I would encourage young athletes to consider when considering a potential transfer out of a program, one of the things that I would say is take your time about this decision. Just because the window is 20 days in the winter and 10 days in the spring doesn't mean that you're only allowed to consider a transfer in those windows. If you're thinking about transferring, you should know. And you should have enough thought that this isn't a snap judgment or decision that you just make within that very short period of time. The second thing is, and this is something that I have for my, although not numerous, for my friends and colleagues who, like me, are pro-transfer portal, that believe students should have the right, as non-athlete students do, to make a decision of where is the best place to continue their, let's say, education, though for many it's also sporting career. There has to be some level of consideration for the schools as well. I am pro-transfer window. I am pro-transfer portal. But I also say that there does have to be some consideration for the schools as well. And if you have a D1 council comprised of athletic directors, school presidents, etc., that are saying it's better for us. Remember, they wanted to close the spring window entirely. They wanted one transfer window in the winter. And for basketball after the tournament in March. So one window for football and the other sports that would have opened after conference championship weekend. And then one window for basketball that would have opened after, I think it was after the semifinals of the basketball tournament it was going to open. It's either the second round or semifinals. I can't remember off the top of my head. Doesn't matter. But instead, they decided we're going to keep the two windows. We're just going to shorten them both. The one in the fall goes from 30 days to 20. The one in the spring goes from 15 days down to 10. Now, I don't particularly care about this because I think by and large, if an athlete's going to transfer, because again, it is an adult decision. And with the adult decision comes adult responsibilities and most importantly, adult consequences. I don't think a player, I'm not saying they shouldn't be allowed to. I'm saying I don't think a player should enter the portal just on a snap judgment. It should be something that should be considered, which by the way is why I am glad that they decided to make it a full 30-day window after a coaching change specifically and kept that window open whenever that change is announced. So if a school decides to relieve a head coach of his coaching responsibilities after week 6 of a college football season, that window's open on week six, day one. And I think that's good. I think the players should be allowed the same opportunity to make a change that a school can make a change. If a school can make a change of a head coach anytime they want, then those players should be allowed to react to that change by going, nope, that's the guy I came here to play for. As I've said many, many times in the past, recruiting is comprised of 3 C's, coaching, cultures, and cash. And a lot of players go sign up to play for a coach. I was listening to a podcast segment yesterday, and they were talking about, I want to say it was Nebraska, Matt Rule's tenure. And they said that there is a guy who transferred there. I think he said it was a transfer. And this kid got hurt in one of the recent games for Nebraska. They did not name the player, but they said this kid got hurt. And they said the coach had been texting the kid's dad the last couple of days and going, okay, here's the results from his recent test. Here's our plan for the kid moving forward. Here are the things he's approved to do. Here's the way that we're attacking, letting him do those things while also focusing on the injury. Here's his school progress while he's going through this, yada, yada, yada. And the podcast host, I want to say it was a Nebraska guy, said that he talked to the kid's dad. And the kid's dad was like, I was blown away because no coach has treated him like this. No coach has treated me as his father like this. No coach has been as informative about our son's status with the team, with his injury rehabilitation, with his progress as an athlete, with his progress as a student. We love this. My kid loves this. I love this. We know we made a good decision to come here. If there's a kid out there, if there's a parent out there and a kid out there who hear a story like this about Matt Rule, and their decision to go play for Matt Rule is because the parent said, hey, we love the amount of attention that this coaching staff is giving to us as parents to update us about our kids' progress and yada, 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 and they decide to go play there. And then let's say Matt Rule starts next year 0-6 and they get canned, then I think it's fair if the school can make a snap decision to relieve the head coach, that a player has the right and a month to consider whether or not he wants to stay there. Because if that kid is there to play for Matt Rule and that kid goes, I don't want to play for anybody but Matt Rule. Yeah, I think he should have the opportunity to roll out to a new school just like Matt Rule's about to. So I'm glad they left that 30-day transfer window open. I'm fine with shortening the other windows because I would tell every one of these college athletes, you better think about this decision because there are consequences to this decision. There are consequences to your decision to transfer. There are consequences to your decision to leave. You may be enticed by another school to go to a place, and then you get there and you find out, yeah, no, they lied to you. They didn't plan on starting you. They just wanted a warm body on the depth chart. They needed a special teams ace. They lied to you about being a starting corner. They needed you to be a gunner on the punt team. And that's why they brought you there. Adult decisions have adult consequences. And so I'm good with the windows being shortened but left open for kids to have time to consider this decision, whether or not they wanted to go. Because that decision, I think, for most of them, probably should be made when the window's open. Pack fan Shoof. I think Shuf, S-H-U-F, Shuf.
That's more of Shuf.
Pac-Fan Shuf, Pac-Fan Shuf.
Why would it be, there's no thingy over the U, so it would be
Well,
Shuf.
There's no thingy over the U in Schuster, but that's just a U. Or does it need the E? I don't think Schuster has the E. It's just S-C-H-U-S-T-E-R. This is S-H-U-F.
It's,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's
Shuf. This Pac-Fan said, just make it a job, and then the school can get rid of the player anytime. Again, adult decisions have adult consequences. One of the things that has been brought up many times as these antitrust lawsuits go through, and part of the reason that they left the spring window in play is a belief amongst the D1 council that depending on the outcome of these three antitrust lawsuits that the NCAA is litigating their way through right now, the belief is that the result of them could have ended up in a situation where the players would have had the power, or the players' attorneys would have had the power, to effectively sue the NCAA to reinstate the spring transfer window, and likely they would have won that as well. And so they just said, let's just leave it open but shorten both. And hopefully that is a preemptive compromise. And I think it's fair. But I've said a number of times, to me, school employment at this point is an inevitability. It's going to happen. Now, it's not me saying by this date, because I don't know. Could be next year, could be 5 years, could be a decade from now. But I do think players becoming employees is effectively inevitable at this point, because so many of the legal discussions that are taking place, in my opinion, can be solved one way and one way only: collective bargaining. But see, here's the thing. You can't collectively bargain with just one entity. And right now, the players are not, air quote, collectively one entity. They are a billion entities, as every athlete is their own at this point. How do you fix that? How do you make them one entity? There's only one way to do it. You allow them to unionize. You allow them to unionize, to discuss how they want their union to operate, to work. And then that union speaks on behalf of the players. So that union comes to the table with the NCAA as a representative entity. And now they can negotiate with the NCAA. They can negotiate on behalf of the players as a whole. And now you can start having discussions. Because what's one of the big things that's thrown away? Top of my head, salary cap. NIL cap, right? We want an NIL schools. We want an NIL cap. Well, you're only going to get away with that if the players agree to one. And for the players to agree to one, they've got to be allowed to unionize. And they can only unionize if they are employees and have employee status. And to me, all of this circles back around, we've said it a million times, all of this circles back around to the NCAA had the opportunity when NIL came down the pipe to lay down some guidelines, or as they love to say, guardrails. Put down the guardrails, put down the protocols, and then we can negotiate whether we want to move them in or out down the line. But they didn't do that. They created chaos, and now they're trying to rein the chaos in. And anybody with multiple small children can tell you, reining in chaos is not easy when all of them are pinging off of different walls at different places at different speeds. And that's effectively what you have. When we come back, Shane Beamer had some comments on the Dylan Stewart penalty this weekend. I'm going to play them for you, and then we will address them next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Ops.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Rob Brown Show continues. It's the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And the South Carolina Gamecocks loss to the Ole Miss Running Rebels, nay, but a few days ago. Down by many points, Dylan Stewart, defensive end for the Gamecocks, recorded a sack. And when he stood up over Ole Miss quarterback Jackson Dart, he proceeded to simulate firing an automatic rifle at the quarterback while still laying on the ground. The quarterback laying on the ground, not Dylan Stewart, obviously. Well, there has been, understandably so, a lot of critique and criticism about the celebration, about what was perceived to be a lack of discipline over it, etc., etc. Shane Beamer, yesterday, to me, allowed a little bit of frustration to show. I'm going to play you this audio, and then we're going to react to it. Lonzo, have you heard this audio from Shane, aside from me playing it screened a minute ago?
Just a little bit that you were doing there. That
was wonderful. It. We're going to get Lonzo's knee-jerk reaction. I'm going to give you my thoughts, and I want yours. Here is Shane Beamer responding to that situation. What's your gut reaction to that, great one? Anything jump off the page at you?
First of all, I think he came at the at social media a little bit, and which doesn't bother me. And the other thing is the fact that he said that he had been punished for it. I mean, okay, let's move on.
I will start.
He also did say that it was childish what he did.
And sure,
I mean, without saying it, how you have to correct a child. I think that was pretty much saying, hey, that was childish. He won't do that again.
I agree. There's a couple of things. I will say this. One of the criticisms of Shane Beamer over the past couple of years has been the feeling that, and I will go on the record before I say this and say I don't agree with it, but the feeling that Shane emotionally reacts to criticism. To critique. This is a job that is going to inevitably come with a ton of criticism and critique. And it feels like, and this, I'm not saying this is even wrong. It's just a critique of Shane Beamer. That he takes things very personally and he reacts to them as if he has taken them personally.
Well, there are some people that are so grating the way they come at you that you can't help but respond.
In a situation in which you are in a place like Shane Beamer is, you better learn how to help. You better learn. It's kind of like you and I. If I go out to a bar and someone says something to me a certain way, I have to recognize and realize that if I haul off and punch this guy in the teeth and knock him out, it's on the news. I'm never in the local news. But you damn sure better believe that some young intrepid reporter is going to go, local radio host punches man in the face. Like, it's when you're in a role with the public awareness of a guy like Shane Beamer, you better learn how to handle criticism. Now, with that being said, the only real issue I have here is at the very beginning of the comments, the social media angels take. I'm going to draw it to what he said at the end, you know, the way a parent has to educate a child when they make a mistake. It is one thing for and I'll even use his example. Shane, we'll come to where you are right now. I'm good with that because I like Shane. I'll come to where he's at for this conversation. It is one thing if a child makes a mistake. You come home and your kid is colored on the wall with a marker. Now,
or in my case, paint.
Or paint. You come home and your kid's colored on the wall with something. You might look at that and be real, real mad, but that's because you know what they did is bad. If this has never been a thing before, you probably go, you got to go, they doesn't know better. That's one thing. It's another thing when three of your four kids have all colored on the wall, have all been admonished, have all been taught better, have all been disciplined, and now kid number four colors on the wall for the fourth time. That kid knows better by now. They have been educated multiple times at this point. As I have said to you guys in this show this week, the brandishing a weapon penalty, as it is being officially labeled, has been called 100% of the time so far this year. You have to know better. Five kids have colored on the wall and gotten in trouble already. This is not, and this takes me to point number two. The critique, Shano, the criticism here is not that we want Dylan Stewart strung up by his toes at 5 points. That's not what we've been talking about. The criticism here is that you've got a team with at least a kid on it who in that moment, in that situation, didn't have the discipline to know you can't do that. My man, you were down 4 touchdowns in this game. And it's not to say it's a game you can't come back in, but it is a game that if you are going to come back in, it is going to be a slog of a comeback. It is going to be a big effort to come back in out of the hole that you're dug in. So 15-yard stupid penalties. I'm going to go full Randy Orton on that one. Stupid. When your team's committing these infractions, you're digging yourself a deeper and deeper hole in that spot. The criticism isn't, oh, Dylan Stewart needs... Okay, it is from some people. But at least from me, the criticism isn't that I think you should run Dylan Stewart out of town. The criticism isn't that I think he should be ejected from the football program. No, quite the opposite. I also understand that he's a kid and he did a dumb thing caught up in the emotion of the moment. And Shane goes and goes, there was a lot of things happening that started in the first quarter that led up to that. Look, go back to the beginning of the show. I took a joke, one joke too far, because I was caught up in how funny I thought I was at the moment. And I'm 40. All right? Dumb people do dumb things.
You really shouldn't draw attention to that. That was bad.
Yeah, one step too far. But that's okay. It made me laugh, and that's all I care about. The point here is...
Thanks for caring about the team there.
The point here is the criticism, at least from this show, isn't that I want my man kicked off the program. No. He's a kid. And kids do kid things. They do dumb things. And kids do dumb things and say dumb things and act dumb ways, especially when they're part of... That's trendy. That's cool. That's what's happening right now. It's not shocking that in a year where I've got 5 other games where somebody has brandished a weapon imaginatively and been penalized for it, yeah, that's the trend right now. Just like 2 seasons ago, the trend was hitting the gritty in the end zone. And everybody, Justin Jefferson's hitting the gritty. Everybody's hitting the gritty. It just happens to be that this one is one that's a little uncomfortable for people in the current political climate that which we all live. So, my thought here is, I think Shane is off the point. And maybe that is the point. Maybe it's if I can take the conversation over here, I can get it away from over here. Because I think, hey, coach, it kind of feels like your team lacks discipline right now. I actually think that's a valid criticism. Okay? I that was what I opened the show with on Monday. I think your team lacks discipline. Your team's not dialed in. And I base that on the fact that you had the extra week, the bye week, and the rest week to get ready for Ole Miss, and your team looked completely lost. Not just your team, your coaching staff and your football players looked lost. They looked out of sorts. You got your asses whipped. Whipped, as John Goodman might say. When your game after a bye week looks like that, I think the criticism of your team looks undisciplined is warranted. Now, Lonzo's riding out optimism. I want to. That LSU-Kentucky were really South Carolina. This was just a one-off performance. And we'll find out. Can you make it even look competitive against Alabama this weekend? No, because Alabama just lost to Vanderbilt. They are going to make an example out of you. I am terribly sorry to inform you. But do you go out there and at least execute your plays? Do you at least fight? Do you walk off the field on Saturday knowing that Rob Brown's going to get on the radio Monday and go, you got clobbered because they're a bunch of thoroughbreds. You got clobbered because they're just better than you are. You executed. The game plan was sound. Your boys were doing all they could. But at the end of the day, Alabama's just got the hosses and you ain't. You're working towards it, but you ain't. Because that's what the team needs to focus on right now. At least go execute in a way that when we come back in here on Monday and we go, you got your butts whooped. It's not because they outplayed you. It's just because they're just better than you are. Because they are. Respectfully, they're just better than you. They're better than just about everybody. That's why the Vandy upset is, Zoe, I'm going to say the most shocking result in a college football game since
App State Michigan.
App State Michigan.
For sure.
Yeah. The most shocking individual college football score since App State Michigan. You can add Vandy Bama to that list of, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when this upset happened. I do. I was sitting on a couch in my living room, and I stopped watching what I was watching to flip it to Vandy, Alabama, to watch the end of that game. It was that shocking. So, Shane, the criticism is not, oh, we want Dylan Stone. I'm sure it is from some people, because that's a take that's going to get you a reaction. And some people do. I'm not doing this show for a reaction. I never have. My criticism is, that is an example. That is the example of the fact that on Saturday, after a bye week, a long week, time to prep, time to game plan, time to get ready, time to watch tape, time to get healthy, your team looked bad. I don't know if you want me to dress that up for you a little bit. And number two, and this is the part where I did kind of go, don't like that. Oh, you social media angels who have never done anything wrong. Do you understand there's a, as I say about everything, these things exist on a spectrum. Have I done things wrong? Yeah. Many. Do you understand the difference between Rob accidentally said a dirty word on the radio versus Rob went on the radio and said, you son of a, like, do you see there's a difference? Those are two different, any different, differing in quality of crime, right? Yeah,
that's how you speak to me before.
Right. I keep that in the office, meeting. Like right, an adult.
Yeah. Like when you're talking about all the mistakes I make right before we go on the air. Yeah.
Lonzo, stop talking without turning your microphone on, you. Right. That's what the Fortress of Nerditude for.
And then once you get a tear out of me, then we're done.
Right.
So, okay.
You understand there's a difference between Rob accidentally said a dirty word on the radio versus Rob came in here and reenacted a George Carlin skit. There's a variance in egregiousness, right? It's one thing if a dude scores a tutty and, you know, flips the ball into an opponent's face and gets a 15-yarder versus rolls over him, gets up and pretends to execute him when you know that is a point of emphasis call this year. He lost his head. Now, again, I'm not really super concerned about it. My man just did what is popular to do right now, and he's a kid. Newsflash, kids, and most of you, do popular things, even if the popular thing is dumb. I used to wear JNCOs. As a 40-year-old dude, I'm like, that's the dumbest pair of pants ever made. There is no good reason for JNCOs. I have a soft spot in my heart for them.
Now, parachute pants, that's a totally different thing.
Correct. But JNCOs, no point for JNCOs. And if you don't know what a JNCO is, all right, you're late for class if you don't know what a JNCO is, all right? There was no point to it, but I wore the hell out of some JNCOs. Why? because I was in with the trends and I was young and dumb. I don't care that the kid did a young and dumb thing. What I care about is that he did a young and dumb thing that you know is against the rules, that you know is getting flagged 100% of the time, and did it in a moment where he could have built some momentum for the team. If that sack stands and that goes that way, that's a big loss. They're now facing second or third, whatever it was, and forever. You got a chance to not just get the ball, but to flip the field in the process, and instead you went, no, here's a free first down you didn't earn, 15 yards further down the field than you were, and they go on and that's the problem, Shane. It's the fact that your team came out after a bye week looking undisciplined, they did not execute, and making dumb decisions in the heat of the moment. This isn't about running Dylan out of town. I don't want Dylan run out of town. He's a hell of a ball player, and he made a stupid kid mistake. The problem is he made a stupid kid mistake in a spot where mistakes, if they're up 35 points, I don't give a darn about this. I don't care. I go, you know, it's getting flagged, but you're up 35. What are you going to do? What I care about is that in the spot you did it, you had a chance to build some momentum, and your player lost his mind in that spot. Can't do that. That's the mark of an undisciplined team. That's what people are upset about, Shano. 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. That's the renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone. Gamecock fans, you've heard my take. I want yours. 844-326-3663. Am I off the mark, spot on the mark? Your thoughts are welcome after Lonzo sensuously reads this sports flash.
How you doing, girl?
Yeah!
The New York Jets fired head coach Robert Saleh yesterday after the team opened the season with a record of 2-3. Owner Woody Johnson said the decision was his. Saleh had been with the Jets since 2021 and compiled a 20-36 record. That's bad. And was unable to end the Jets' 13-year playoff drought, which you can't if you have a record like that. Defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich will take over as interim head coach for the remainder of the season. Fernando Tatis Jr. hit his fourth home run in five games as the San Diego Padres beat the LA Dodgers 6-5 and took a 2-1 lead in the National League Division Series. Game 4 of the series is Thursday. The New York Mets beat the Phillies 7-2 last night to take a 2-1 lead in their NL Division Series. Tune in this Saturday at 12:30 as Furman Paladins take on the Chattanooga Mocs. It's Furman versus Chattanooga right here on your home for Paladins football. Also Paladins football. It is The Fan, Upstate.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.